Hey there and welcome. Ready for a deep dive into object-oriented design?
Absolutely.
OD, it's not just some abstract concept.
Right.
It's a seriously powerful way to build some impressive software.
It really is, yeah.
Instead of just, you know, churning out lines of code.
Yeah.
Think of it more like creating a system of reusable interconnected components.
Yeah, it's like, that's much more strategic, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
Just regular programming.
Yeah. And just like any good structure, we've got to start with a solid foundation.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's where the four pillars of object-oriented programming come in. Encapsulation, inheritance, polymorphism, and abstraction. Now, I know those sound a bit intimidating.
They do.
But trust me, once we break them down...
They're not that bad.
They're actually quite straightforward.
Yeah.
So first up, encapsulation.
Right.
Think of this as like creating a blueprint for your code.
Right.
Each component or class holds its own data and methods.
Okay.
It's kind of like a self-contained unit.
That's a great way to think about it.
Right?
Yeah, because it really helps you simplify complex systems.
Absolutely.
By bundling that data and those operations together, you reduce dependencies, you make your code easier to debug.
Oh, so much easier.
Because it's much easier to track down an issue inside of a contained unit than if everything's all over the place.
Absolutely. Speaking of organization, that leads us to inheritance.
Okay.
This pillar is all about efficiency and reusability.
Right.
Imagine you're building a fleet of cars, right? You wouldn't design each one from scratch, would you?
No way.
With inheritance, you create this base car class with all the common features.
Yeah.
Four wheels, an engine, seats, and then you create these specialized subclasses like sedan or SUV that inherit those base characteristics.
Yeah.
It's such a powerful tool.
And it really helps you model real-world relationships in your code, too.
Absolutely.
And like you said, it saves so much time because you're reusing that code.
Exactly.
And reducing the potential for errors.
It's a win-win.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we have polymorphism.
Okay.
Now, I know that one sounds kind of scary.
Yeah, it sounds a little intimidating.
But it's really not that bad.
Not at all.
Think of it this way. You have a single action.
Okay.
Like play, right?
Yeah.
But it behaves differently depending on the context.
That's a great way to think about it.
You press play on a music app.
Right.
You hear a song, you press play on a video game, and the action starts.
Exactly.
Same word, different outcomes.
It just gives your objects that flexibility to take on multiple forms while still fitting into your system architecture.
Exactly.
Which is super useful when you're building software that needs to do a lot of different things.
All right. And last but not least, we have abstraction.
Okay.
Which is all about simplifying those complex processes instead of worrying about every single little detail. We create these higher level representations that allow us to interact with the system in a more manageable way.
Exactly. Because who wants to think about all those details anyway?
Right.
You just want to use the thing.
Exactly. You just want it to work.
Right. Yeah.
It's kind
like
of
like using a map instead of trying to memorize every single street to get around a city.
You got it. So we've covered the four pillars of object-oriented programming.
The building blocks.
The building blocks. Encapsulation keeps things organized.
Yes.
Inheritance promotes that reusability.
Right.
Polymorphism allows for flexibility.
That's the one. And abstraction simplifies that complexity.
Exactly. Now, these are the fundamentals of object-oriented programming.
They really are.
But to really unlock the true power of OD, we need to go a little bit deeper.
We do.
We need to delve into the world of solid principles.
Okay, I'm ready.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it. Yeah, like you said, those solid principles are really key.
So let's dive into those a bit.
Okay.
What does SOLID stand for?
So SOLID is an acronym.
Okay.
And it stands for Single Responsibility Principle.
Okay.
Open-Closed Principle.
Oh.
Liskov Substitution Principle.
Oh, boy.
Interface Segregation Principle.
Okay.
And Dependency Inversion Principle.
Wow, that's a mouthful. So each one of those addresses a specific aspect of good object-oriented design.
They do.
Yeah.
It's like a checklist to make sure you're on the right path.
Gotcha.
When you're writing your code.
Okay, let's tackle them one by one then.
Okay.
First up, single responsibility principle.
All right.
I'm sensing a theme here of organization.
There is, yeah.
So tell me more.
The single responsibility principle basically says that every module or class should only have one job.
Okay.
It should only be responsible for one part of your software's functionality.
So instead of having like one giant class that does everything.
Exactly. That gets messy fast.
Yeah.
It's much better to break things down.
Yeah.
Have each class do one thing well.
That makes a lot of sense.
Right. It's like having specialized chefs in a kitchen.
Right.
You wouldn't want one chef trying to cook every single dish at the same time.
Okay, that's a great analogy. I like that.
It would be chaos.
Yeah.
But if you have someone who's really good at making pasta,
right,
someone else who's amazing at desserts,
yeah,
things run much smoother.
It's all coming together now.
Right.
I'm getting hungry, though.
Huh.
All right, let's move on to the open-closed principle.
Okay, so this one sounds a little contradictory.
A little bit, yeah.
How can something be both open and closed?
Yeah.
But it makes sense in the context of software.
Okay.
It means that your code should be open to extension,
mm-hmm,
but closed to modification.
So what does that mean in practice?
Okay, so let's say you've got a part of your code,
yeah,
that handles online payments.
Okay.
Right now, you might only accept credit cards.
Okay.
But what if you want to add PayPal later?
Yeah, you'd have to go back and change a bunch of stuff, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's where the open-closed principle comes in.
Okay.
You want to design your code,
yeah,
so that you can add that new payment option,
right,
without messing with the existing credit card code.
Because that's already working. Right.
Right. You don't want to introduce new bugs.
Gotcha.
By changing code that's already been tested.
So how do you do that? How do you actually make your code open to extension but closed to modification?
There are a few different ways.
Okay.
One common one is to use interfaces.
Okay.
Or abstract classes.
Yeah.
Basically, you define a contract.
Okay.
That your payment processing code has to follow.
Yeah.
And then you can create new classes for PayPal, Stripe, whatever.
Gotcha.
And as long as they follow that contract,
yeah,
they'll work seamlessly with your existing code.
Ah, so it's like future-proofing your carrot in a way.
Exactly.
All right, let's move on to principle number three.
Right.
The Liskov substitution principle.
This one is all about subtypes and how they interact with your main code.
Okay, give me an example.
All right, imagine you have a program that deals with different kinds of birds.
Okay, I like birds.
You have a general bird class.
Yeah.
And then you have subclasses like duck, mm, eagle, penguin, you name it.
Makes sense.
Now, the Liskov substitution principle says that any part of your code that works with a bird object,
right,
should also work correctly,
yeah,
if you substitute it with a duck object,
okay,
or an eagle object.
Makes sense so far.
But here's the catch.
Okay.
What about penguins?
What about them? They're birds. Right.
They are, but they can't fly.
Oh, right. That's a problem.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if your code assumes that all birds can fly,
yeah,
you're going to run into trouble when you try to use a penguin.
Yeah. It's all making sense now.
So the Liskov substitution principle basically says,
yeah,
make sure your subtypes,
yeah,
don't break the expected behavior,
gotcha,
of their parent class.
That makes a lot of sense, and it seems really important, actually.
It is. It prevents a lot of weird bugs down the line.
Yeah. Okay, on to number four, the interface segregation principle.
All right, this one's all about keeping your interfaces lean and mean.
Lean and mean. I like it.
So imagine you have a big, bulky interface.
Okay.
With a ton of methods on it.
Yeah.
And you have different classes that only need to use a small portion of those methods.
Right.
The interface segregation principle says,
yeah,
don't force those classes to depend on methods they don't even use.
So break down that big interface into smaller, more focused ones.
Exactly.
Okay. That
makes sense. Like you wouldn't want a TV remote,
right,
with buttons for every single function imaginable.
Oh, I hate that.
Right. It'd be overwhelming and confusing.
Yeah. You'd never find the power button.
Exactly. So you break it down.
Right.
You have separate controls for the important stuff.
Makes sense.
And you can even have spiralized remotes,
yeah,
for different features, like a universal remote or something.
Okay, so it's all about designing interfaces that are tailored to the specific needs of the clients using them.
Yeah, precisely.
And that brings us to our last solid principle, the dependency inversion principle.
This one's a bit more abstract.
Okay.
But it's a game changer once you grasp it.
Lay it on me.
It's all about reducing dependencies between different parts of your code.
Okay.
Specifically between high-level modules and low-level modules.
High-level, low-level, what's the difference?
So high-level modules are like the brains of your application.
Okay.
They contain the core logic.
Mm-hmm.
They make the big decisions.
Okay.
Low-level modules are more about the details.
Gotcha.
They handle things like database access,
okay,
network communication.
The nitty-gritty stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, the dependency inversion principle says that,
yeah,
your high-level modules,
yeah,
should not depend directly on those low-level modules.
So how do you do that? How do you separate them?
You introduce an abstraction layer.
An abstraction layer.
Yes. It's like a contract,
okay,
that both the high-level and low-level modules have to follow. So instead of that high-level module saying,
yeah,
hey, low-level module, I need you to go fetch this data from the database.
Okay.
It says, I need some data that looks like this.
Okay.
And the abstraction layer takes care of the details.
Interesting. So the high-level module doesn't even need to know how the data is fetched.
Exactly.
It just knows that it needs data in a certain format.
And that makes your code much more flexible.
Okay.
Because you can easily swap out those low-level modules.
Right, because the high-level module doesn't care how it's done, just that it gets done.
Precisely.
All right, so we've talked theory, but how does this actually play out in a real project?
Yeah, let's get down to brass tacks.
We've got that Python code for a parking lot management system.
Right, right.
Let's use that as our example.
Perfect example.
So we're designing this parking lot system.
Yeah. Okay.
What are some of the core classes we might need?
Well, first, you got to have a parking lot class, right?
Yeah, makes sense.
That's like the overall container.
Right, it's the big picture.
It keeps track of how many spaces there are, you know?
Available spaces, total spaces.
Exactly, exactly.
Maybe even like different sections or levels.
Oh, yeah, you could get really fancy with it.
We could.
Different floors, reserved sections, the whole nine yards.
Okay, so our parking lot class, that's like the blueprint for the whole structure.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, what about the individual parking spaces?
All right, so for that, you'd probably want a parking space class.
Okay.
Each instance of that class would represent one spot.
And each parking space object would need data associated with it, right?
Right, like whether it's occupied or not.
Yeah, is it free? Is it taken?
Maybe what type of vehicle can park there.
Oh, right, like car, motorcycle, that kind of thing.
Exactly. You could even have special spaces for, like, oversized vehicles.
Ooh, like those giant SUVs everyone seems to have these days.
Those are the worst. Always hogging up two spaces.
All right, so we've got our parking lot, our parking spaces.
Yeah.
We need to represent the vehicles themselves.
All right, so a vehicle class would be a good idea.
Okay, but there are all kinds of vehicles.
True, true.
How do we handle that variety?
That's where inheritance comes in handy.
Okay, I see where you're going with this.
You have your base vehicle class.
Yeah.
With the common stuff like make, model, color.
Right, the basics.
And then you create subclasses for each type.
Car, motorcycle,
truck.
Exactly. And each subclass can have its own special properties.
Like a car might have a number of doors.
Right. And a motorcycle would have engine displacement.
See, this is all starting to click now.
It all comes together.
So we've got these classes, but where do the solid principles actually fit in?
Ah, the million-dollar question.
Give me an example. How would we use, say, the single responsibility principle?
Let's go back to our parking space class.
Okay.
Its main job is to manage the state of that single parking space.
Right. Is it free? Is it occupied? That kind of thing.
Exactly. We don't want to bog it down with other stuff.
Like, it shouldn't be calculating parking fees.
Exactly. Or handling user counts.
Right. That's way too much.
That's a recipe for a messy class.
So separate classes for those responsibilities.
Precisely. One job per class keeps things clean.
And the open-close principle, how would we apply that to our parking lot?
Okay, imagine our parking lot wants to add those EV charging stations.
Okay, getting fancy.
Right. So, do we go back and change our parking space class?
I mean, it seems like that would get messy fast.
It would, and that's where the open-close principle says, hold on.
So what do we do instead?
We extend, not modify.
Okay, I like the sound of that.
Create a new subclass, maybe call it charging space.
And it inherits from parking space.
Exactly. So it gets all the basic parking space functionality.
But then adds the charging specific stuff.
Exactly. You've got it. And the best part is, you haven't touched your original parking space class.
So it's still nice and stable.
Stable as a rock. And you've added new features without creating chaos.
That's the dream, right? Stable and adaptable code.
That's the name of the game.
Well, I've got to say, this has been an amazing deep dive.
I agree.
We've covered so much ground.
From the foundations to real-world application.
And the best part is, this is just the beginning.
Oh, yeah. There's so much more to explore with object-oriented design.
For our listeners, where should they go from here? Any advice?
Don't be afraid to experiment. Build something, even if it's small.
Right. Put these principles into practice.
Exactly. The more you code, the more it'll all make sense.
That's great advice, and that brings us to the end of today's deep dive.
Until next time.
Thanks for joining us, and happy coding, everyone.